Our next guest, a former player at the University of Maine, offensive coordinator, associate head coach, who then went off to engineer the most successful startup in the history of FBS football as the head coach at Old Dominion University. We are pleased to be joined by our friend Bobby Wilder. Bobby, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Rich. Great talking to you, my friend.
Good to have you back. How have you been during this whole quarantine situation?
Oh, just been living the dream. A lot of walks, working out, walking the dogs, and then trying to just practice my social distancing.
I appreciate that. Well, I wanted to talk with you because, as I mentioned in my message, I've been very impressed, and you did it tongue in cheek. But when you decided that you would be the commissioner of college football, the first thing I thought was, well, why don't we have one of those? And number two, if we do, it ought to be Bobby Wilder because you've had some great ideas.
I appreciate that, Rich. And you're seeing now with the announcements today, the fact that the Big Ten went on their own, the Pac-12 went on their own, yet we've still got the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12. We've still got the Sun Belt, the AAC. We've still got Conference USA minus Old Dominion that are pressing forward. I think the guy, Rich, and your listeners and you should pay attention to this one guy, Greg Sankey, who's the commissioner of the SEC, has by far done the best job because he keeps saying, we're going to wait, we're going to continue to gather information from the medical experts. They keep telling us to wait, that things could get better. They push their season back to September 26th, which means they don't have to start preseason as soon. So I think of all these guys, Greg Sankey has done the best. But my question is, and I pose this to many of the people that I know in college football, people that write about it, cover it, why don't we have somebody like Greg Sankey, who is the one voice that speaks for everybody? And everybody agrees with me, and nobody can give me an answer.
Well, and why won't the governing board, the NCAA, which, my gosh, if some student was making a few bucks in a part-time job, they'd be all over it. But in an issue as big as this, it's hands off.
You're right about that, Rich. And I rarely ever say what I'm about to say to you in defense of the NCAA. Let's keep in mind why they were formed. Initially, they were formed to run championships.
Right.
That's what they were formed to do. And then they became this policing arm, which in a lot of ways they had to, because coaches, which I was one of them, started breaking rules and started doing things illegally in recruiting and other areas, and then runners got involved, and then all these people, and they had to become a governing board, and they were giving all this power by the presidents, and even the NCAA, if there was one person that would oversee them, if we had a commissioner that would say, all right, we're going to use common sense in this situation when it comes to players and how players will be allowed to market themselves and make money. It's having such a snowball effect, Rich. And one person I would recommend to you and others to follow is Jason Bryan. I got to know Jason. He was an Old Dominion graduate. He does a lot for wrestling and Olympic sports. Jason Bryan has reported on his Twitter how many sports in the last 5 months, Rich, have been dropped. Almost all of them, college sports, our Olympic sports. We're now at 314 Olympic sports, Rich, that have been dropped. And you and I know that if the machine that is football and men's college basketball does not play, we're going to see even more of that, because it's football and men's basketball that help pay for a lot of these other sports on college campuses that I believe in, I think we need. And I am scared to death right now what's going to happen to a lot of my friends that are coaches and a lot of athletes that I know that are members of Olympic sports on college campuses.
And in the football world, I feel so badly for coaches, athletic directors, entire athletic departments, and most of all for players who came back to campus and were really, I think, hung out to dry by the lack of any unifying force and decision, and everybody trying to do what's best for the young men involved in this without any clear answers.
You're 100% right on that, Rich. And I've been personally affected in my family. My oldest son, Derek, is a senior at Old Dominion who is preparing, training to play football this year. They just said they're not playing. My youngest son is a plebe. He's a freshman at the United States Naval Academy. I talked to him on Sunday, and his first question is always, Dad, what's going to happen? Are we going to play? The Naval Academy is a member of the AAC, the American Athletic Conference. They're still trying to play, so that there's just so much confusion for these athletes, and not just football, in every sport, every fall sport. We're talking field hockey. We're talking women's lacrosse. We're talking men's and women's soccer, women's volleyball. All these sports that have been training this summer to play are now finding out that the leadership is saying it's not safe enough to play. Even though you've been training, it's not safe enough for you to play.
What do you think happens next? Is there any shot at all that we see college football this fall?
Well, I was feeling confident that there was when a very renowned doctor who's representing the AAC's, Dr. Duke, came out yesterday and said, if the student-athletes continue to follow all the protocols they've been following, and we keep seeing a lot of testing numbers that North Carolina tested 300 athletes with zero positives and on, you know, this doctor said it can be done, yet today we see the Big Ten and the Pac-12 come out and announce they're canceling, and the quote I'm seeing, which over and over, is the health, safety, and well-being of our student-athletes and all those connected to the sports is our number one priority, yet I'm a little confused because my two sons have been training all summer at their schools to play football, and now it's no longer safe. I see both sides of the argument, but I want to see the new data that they're making this decision on to cancel that's out there that's showing the risk and the effects, because as a parent, I feel like my sons are safest when they're in the environment they're in. They're being tested at least three times a week. There are so many tests that have come back positive. They haven't been affected. Even the student athletes that I know that have tested positive have been back in a couple weeks. They've just had the flu-like symptoms, and they've come back and been healthy. So I'm really curious, Rich, to see this new data and information that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 made the decision to cancel. I'm anxious to read about this.
Bobby, how much of this do you think is concern about what could happen when the general student population comes back to campus and everybody begins interacting?
It is partly that, Rich, but the number one thing we're talking about here, if we're being 100% honest, and I wish we could get somebody in a position of power to say this, it comes down to one word, Rich, and that is liability.
Mm.
That's what we're talking about right now, is the liability if a student-athlete, male or female, gets sick, has long-term effects. We start to see lawsuits, litigations coming forward. I believe that the leadership right now in college sports is scared to death about the liability because, Rich, honestly, the last thing you can do is ask an 18 to 22-year-old college athlete to sign a waiver saying that I will not pursue any charges against you if I get sick from this virus. And they're not going to do that. They're not going to ask them to. So right now, I believe that's the number one reason, Rich, why you're seeing these conferences that have already announced they're canceling is the liability issue.
We're talking with Bobby Wilder here on Downtown. As schools look at the possibility of spring football, particularly at the FBS level, how feasible is that to ask students to play even, let's say, 8 games and then turn around a few months later and play a full season?
Well, before I answer that, Rich, let me ask you this question. You're a really smart guy. When do you see all the trials and testing done where we have a vaccine for COVID-19? Give me a date on that.
Well, that's the big unknown, and particularly if we're asking students to get ready to report for preseason in the midst of what would be flu season on top of COVID-19.
Exactly, and everything I've read, Rich, along that question I just asked you, is we could still be a year away from a vaccination. So now when the leadership in college athletics has come out and said health and safety of our student athletes, how can we possibly consider playing winter sports? How can we consider doing football next March, April, and May, and then taking a couple months off and kicking it up again without a vaccine when we just heard from the leadership of the Big Ten and the Pac-12. It's paramount. It's about the safety of the student athletes. Who's going to answer that question?
And also, I don't know how big a factor this is, the optics out there of college athletes, much as it is with professional athletes, getting tested on a regular basis when in many states we still don't have that ability to test.
Yeah, that's a great point. And to answer your previous question about when the general population comes back to campus, let's use the Big Ten, for example. You've got some schools like Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State. There's 40,000-plus students on those campuses. Now, the student athletes have all the testing and everything they need to stay safe because everybody's watching that. Everybody's reporting on that. What do the 40,000 students that report to campus have? And are they going to follow the protocols? Are they going to wear their masks? Are they going to practice social distancing? I'm still friends with the president here at Old Dominion, John Broderick, who has been wrestling for the last 5 months with how do I bring students into a classroom? How do I take a classroom that holds 30 students and to properly social distance justify putting 6, 8, maybe 10 students in that classroom? How can we possibly have enough classes, have enough professors to run those classes? So this is a major issue right now for most institutions. We've already seen, Rich, the Ivy League, some of the smartest people in the world that took the lead on this. Remember, Rich, when they canceled back in late February their league basketball tournament? Do you remember that?
I sure do.
And they were the first ones to cancel, and initially everybody thought, what are they doing? That's crazy. Well, within 5 days, they canceled on a Friday. By the next Thursday, everybody in America canceled. And then this year, they were the first to cancel football. And then Harvard came out and announced no on-campus classes. It's going to be all virtual learning. So you've got the smartest people in the world that are making these decisions in terms of academia. I think we all consider the Ivy League to be head and shoulders in that regard in terms of the smartest and the brightest in the world. And they're the ones taking the lead on canceling everything. So that's putting even more pressure on every other college president in America to do the same.
Bobby, before we let you go, a personal question. What's next for you? You had hinted on social media that broadcasting might be up next, and man, I think you would be phenomenal at that.
I really appreciate you saying that, Rich. And back in December when I resigned from Old Dominion, I interviewed for a couple of coaching positions. It just didn't work out, didn't feel right what I was looking at the time. So then I turned my attention in February, once the coaching hiring cycle went through, to broadcasting and had interviews set up with ESPN, Fox, CBS to become a color analyst for college football games. It's always something I've loved to do. I've had a TV show, radio show. I just love college football and wanted to stay part of it. And then this pandemic hits in March, and of course, all the networks put everything on hold. And as you're seeing now, Rich, so many people are getting laid off and let go from broadcasting because now it looks like not going to have college football. So it appears that I'm going to put that on hold for now and then revisit it again next year, hopefully when things get back. But that's truly what I want to do, Rich, is do the broadcasting and move forward in that direction.
Well, I look forward to that because you'll be absolutely tremendous at it. Bobby, it's always good to talk with you. Thank you so much for making time with us.
I have to ask you one question.
Yeah.
You ready for this?
I'm ready,
what
Bobby.
What was the name of the TV show, the football TV show you had? Specifically, I'm thinking back to 1982 because everybody in Madison, Maine watched it when you reported on us winning the state championship my senior year in high school. What was that show?
And that's how old I am, is that I was over covering you in Madison as a high schooler for Monday Night Quarterback.
That's it, Monday Night Quarterback. Oh, it was a great show. How many years did you do that, Rich?
I only did it for 1 year because my friend Steve Martin had done it, and then he went down to North Carolina to work, and I took over for him. And I think it was a labor of love, but it was a ton of work for the people behind the scenes. So I think we only did it for a couple of seasons.
Oh, you guys, I appreciate how much work you guys put into that because I'm not just saying because you covered Madison, but it was a way for people like myself and others that were really into Maine high school football, and you even covered some college football, to be able to watch a show that was about football and sports in Maine. But I hope your broadcasters will go back, or your listeners will go back and try to find that, because a young Rich Kimball was on fire on that field.
Yeah, I looked about 12. So I hope no one finds that tape anywhere, Bobby. Thank you.
That show was awesome.
Bobby, it's great to talk with you. Be well, stay safe, and we'll talk again soon, I hope.
Yeah, please, have me on anytime. I enjoyed this, Rich. A lot of fun, and hello to all your listeners up in Maine. I was up there to visit my family a couple of weeks ago, and Maine truly still is 100% the way life should be.
All right. Thank you very much, Bobby.
You got it. Have a great day, Rich.
That's Bobby Wilder with us on Downtown.